This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate G. I created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle analyzes and explains the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many more. We broadcast live every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which means you can call us during the show and ask Dr. Lyle a question. The U.S. number is 657-383-0751, or send in your question through the website www.beatyourgenes.org. All right, good evening, everybody. It's Nate G. here along with Dr. Doug Lyle. Dr. Lyle, how are you doing this evening?
Good. How about yourself? Is all well?
All's well. We're doing fine here. All right. Looks like got a few storms in the United States. It's getting a little colder. I just spoke to somebody in Chicago, and it was like, it was really cold.
Yeah.
And
how are things there?
Not as cold. You know, we think it's cold when it's like, you know, 45, 55 degrees. But,
nice.
You know.
Yeah.
It was actually, I think, in the 30s, like high 30s earlier this morning.
Yeah.
But then the sun came out and it was kind of nice.
That's impressive. That's impressive. Good job. Way to toughen up.
Yeah.
All right. What are we doing?
Well, today we are going to be asking some questions about falling out of love, different ideas about cultural shifts, and what to do when you're faced with food temptations. But before we get to those questions, it's interesting. I was looking at, there's a website, it's a forum for the internet called Reddit, where all people talk, you can post all kinds of different things, or you can read what other people post. And there's a sub forum in this place that people just ask fun questions of each other, and there's some interesting questions. Well, I'm reading this forum, and it's called, "What's the most effective psychological trick that you use on other people?" And as I'm reading this, I was reading this maybe earlier yesterday evening. And then sure enough, I get an email from one of our listeners saying, "Oh my God, you have to go over some of these in the website on the show today." So I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
So Dr. Lyle, I thought you would appreciate these, but they're very curious little tricks that people use. Of course, in your TED Talk called The Pleasure Trap, you joke around, say that you'll even use some tricks from psychology to hammer the message home about the pleasure trap. And of course, that's an interesting use of psychology. Let me read a few of these, and then you can kind of explain what these psychological tricks are.
Mm-hmm.
So one user here comments, the forum poster comments, "Well, when somebody's shy who's speaking, just look at them and nod your head, and it encourages them to keep on talking." Another person says, "Put in your headphones, but don't play the music. That way you can hear what they're saying about you."
Good poker player. Okay, right. Got it.
Another one says, "Set your expectations low and then blow people's minds with your mediocrity."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Ego trap there. And then the one I like the most, actually, the most positive comment that there's thousands of comments here. But the one I saw the most that I liked, it says, "To avoid workplace drama and be well liked, compliment people behind their backs."
Yes. Actually, a great strategy. That's one of the great political strategies ever, is to essentially compliment people behind their backs, because then they find out about it, and it is worth a lot more than complimenting them to their face. And so that, of course, that would make sense, because they're attempting to run a CB on their relationship with you. And if they find out that you are complimenting them and they don't even know that it's happening, then it means that your high regard for them must be authentic. Status being a zero-sum game, if you're complimenting them, it is elevating them in a hierarchy, possibly at the cost to yourself. And so as a result of that, that makes you worth quite a bit more to them as their champion. And so that's one of the that is one of the slickest things that you can ever do. Yeah, great trick.
I thought it was fascinating because I remember in one of our earlier episodes called How to Repair a Strained Relationship, you explained this process where the person just has no choice. They actually, it's in their best interest to tell the world that you have good judgment, that you have excellent judgment when you tell people how great
right.
they are. And
that's
it's,
right.
it's just a nice
yes.
Virtuous cycle that occurs.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's actually attempting to trip a virtuous cycle is what we're trying to do. Very good.
Well, fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank the listener. I know sometimes I don't reply to emails, but I read each and every one of them. I really appreciate you guys sending me the emails and the questions that we put here on the show. And this one, we were on the same page. So, Dr. Lyle, we'll look straight to the questions here. The first one has to do with falling out of love. Dear Dr. Lyle, what do I do when I find myself completely not into my husband anymore? We've been married for 25 years. We've had many rough circumstances that we've helped one another through. We have three children that are all doing well. Finances are stable, but I simply can't stand to be around him. He runs a business out of our home, and I find myself planning my days to be gone as much as I can simply because he's there. It's driving me crazy because I don't feel like I have a home to be in. I work and make enough money to sustain myself, so why don't I feel comfortable in my own home? I find myself wishing I had a place to go just to relax and be by myself. I'm not attracted to anyone else. I'm simply wanting more and more time alone. From my husband's perspective, he's incredible. He plans fun dates with me, always tells me how beautiful I am. He buys me flowers, sends me kind texts throughout the day. He works really hard at his job and wants all of his resources to be spent on me. He shows his care for me constantly, and I feel bad that I have no spark in me. He even eats all the healthy food that I prepare, and he even enjoys it, which is really sad. Is there something in my genes saying that since I no longer am at an age to have children, that my mind simply is just done with the marriage? It'd be quite convenient for us to just get along and be happy. But why do I feel this way, and why do I want so much distance away from someone who cares so much for me? What can I do to feel more attracted to my husband who's so kind to me? I've read the How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World, or most of it, and it's great and it's helping me learn, helping me with learning more about myself and others every day. But I'm interested in what else I can do about my disinterest and what I can do to awaken in my genes to have a desire for a relationship when all I want is to be alone.
Well, such a detailed question that in a question of this magnitude, I'd want to give very responsible feedback. So there would be many questions that I would ask this person that we obviously can't ask on the air. So but let me I can take that person through the questions if they're listening. And also, this might be instructive for other people. The first thing is that I would want to know about the history of the relationship specifically. So I've heard it's been 25 years, and in 25 years there are, you know, a long history of vicissitudes that have taken place. And she's referred to those. However, a thing that I'm often very interested in is I'm interested in the inherent chemistry in the relationship actually from the jump. And I want to know when it went south. So if it went south a year ago and it was in good shape a year prior, you know, 18 months ago, then that's an entirely different story than if that this has been a duty of this person who was into a guy somewhat, you know, 24 years ago, 26 years ago, got herself married to a really good person that was crazy about her, and then endured a sexual relationship for however long, wound up having children, and then, you know, behind high conscientiousness, high stability, and really no objections otherwise interpersonally about the personality dynamics, just literally kind of wasn't into this relationship really for the last, you know, 24 years or 25 years. So I would want to know if that was the situation
or whether or not we had like 15 good years, 10 good years, 20 good years, 18 good years, et cetera. And the reason why I would want to know this is I want to know if there is something that happened, if there is some specific characteristic or some situation that that has transpired, that has resulted in them going from a pair of people who were into each other to a pair of people where one person is no longer into it. And so this would be really important. Now, she semi-alludes to the following, that she's speculating maybe she's at an age now where she's just not into this, and that is quite possible. So I believe it's 88% of postmenopausal women have no sexual interest in their husbands. So this obviously, you know, that puts us, what, you know, 7 out of 8 or whatever the heck that is. I think it's about right. So that wouldn't be a shock. The however, with anybody specific, we want to know, I mean, but there's a lot of reasons why that would be true, by the way. It wouldn't necessarily be just some biological inevitability that takes place, after 50 years old. Remember, 50% of relationships wind up in a divorce within 15 years. So that tells you that the nature of the species is that this romantic chemistry and enjoyment of that process winds up normally disappearing. That is situation normal for the species. So you can imagine that if 50% actually go to the trouble of getting divorced, a whole heck of a lot more of the next 50% don't want to be where they are, but they're pinned in by obligations, finances, and conscientiousness and enough stability and worry about kids and blah, blah. Okay, all kinds of things. Embarrassment, for God's sakes. The loneliness, don't want to be by themselves. So there's a whole slew of things that would keep the other 50% together, given and indicate that, in other words, an excellent romance is definitely a less than 50% state of affairs, big margin, by the end of 15 years. So that we aren't going to pin that tail on that donkey and call that biology. We're going to call it psychology, evolutionary psychology. We're not going to say, oh, you just get worn out, you're past childbearing age, and you don't care. No, we already see this same phenomenon in people that are younger. So, however, to check all the bases, I would make sure the person had like a thyroid check and a full CBC panel, and make sure that they're not tired or chronically fatigued or have, you know, super low, you know, sex hormone chemistry, blah, blah. Okay. We would certainly want to make sure that it doesn't look there like there's a biological cause, a health related cause. And we would want to see to it that this was a stable phenomenon. In other words, that this has been going on a long time as opposed to a short time. If it's a short time, obviously we may be able to isolate some factor in the relationship or the person's biology that is responsible. So if this person wrote to me and said, we had it great for 23 years, the last 2 years has just dropped off. Well, that's a very different state of affairs than someone who says, actually, it's been lousy for 20 years for me. It's a completely different conversation. So therefore, any advice that I'm giving now has to be painted against a background of a lot of questions and a lot of details about the nature of this relationship. In the nature of its history. Now, yeah, so a relationship that is not very good is not a relationship that is not very good, not very good, not very good. They're all different. They all have different histories, and those histories are extremely important when it comes to responsible prescription for what the next moves are that you would make. I'm going to assume, for the sake of simplicity, that this is not a recent phenomenon. I'm going to assume that this has been going on for 10 years. I'm going to assume that there has been she's not saying that this is sudden. She's just mystified and feels a little guilty about it, feels bad about it. But it's interesting that she says can't stand. I think that's very interesting. The you don't just can't stand a person. You can't stand specific features about the person and the nature of the interactions that you have with them. So I'm not sure what those specific features are, but the reaction of can't stand would be extremely important if she had been in this relationship until fairly recently and now she can't stand them. That would indicate that something, there has been some tipping point of some specific process that we would want to investigate in a lot more detail to see to it that she's not sitting on a bunch of anger and seething about some conflict of interest that they have, and that could be a feature that's blocking her sexual interest and her attraction. Now, from the sound of things, sounds like he acts like a man that is crazy about his wife, and also it sounds like a man after 25 years that goes through an awful lot of effort, which sounds to me like he feels like he's over-rewarded. So one has to wonder if that's been the dynamic of this relationship since forever. And that, and now finally, this person may be seeing looking at her life and watching the hours of her existence and seeing that she's just not very happy where she's at, and that there's nothing egregiously wrong with this person that lives in her house and that she has great connection to in terms of her life process and her children, et cetera, and that they are definitely good friends. But there's just no, the relationship to her is just not a romantic relationship, and it is to him, and therefore they have, a conflict of interest. And so we're going to assume that that's what the situation is, and the right decision is to essentially make the smallest possible modifications first. So the way we attack this problem is never make a big decision when a small decision will do. So she's fantasizing about having her own space. So sounds like they both work financially stable, et cetera. So that now what we would do is we would take some of that space. So I would have this person take, a very small idea would be to, I'd probably take a weekend off, nice extended weekend off, 3-4 days, and get yourself an Airbnb or a hotel, and we're going to spend $400 on getting some time off. So $400 experiment, and if the husband's all upset about it, no problem. Okay, this is, we don't need to be brutal with people, but we need to be reasonably honest. And he clearly is getting all kinds of signals that she's not interested. These things aren't happening in a vacuum. She's not fooling him with how it is that she feels. She's guarding the eggs. She's seeing to it that all processes, romantic and physical, are being shut down as peacefully and elegantly as she can figure out how to do it. So as a result, again, I'm assuming that there isn't some brooding anger about some other issue that's causing her feelings. I'm assuming that she's just not into it. And this is not a tragedy. This is just simply a nervous system that says, hey, I don't know where I'm at, but you don't qualify. And I don't know if anybody ever would qualify again, and it doesn't really matter. The truth of the matter is that given that state of affairs, essentially, I'm kind of tired of guarding the eggs. And I don't want to pretend and give you false feedback that you qualify. Okay? So that's not where we are. It doesn't matter that we're married. That's totally irrelevant. That doesn't come with any obligation here. That's just a hope. And so the way we would talk to this person would be essentially gently but with some honesty, as much honesty and as much dignity as we can get, and just say, hey, listen, I need a little space. So I'm going to take some time off. I'm going to take a weekend off, and I'm not going to be here Friday night, Saturday night, and I'm not going to be here Sunday night. And I will go to work from my Airbnb on Monday morning, and I'll be back Monday evening. So your weekend is yours to do, and I won't be seeing you, and I won't be calling. No check-in. Okay, we can check in by text a little bit. Hey, I'll just let you know I'm fine. That's it. Take some time off. And then if it turns out that this creates a, you know, we'll find out what it creates. I don't even want to anticipate. Sounds like this might be a heck of a guy. He might have his feelings hurt. Oh, well, it's not going to hurt anything. And so if he gets all upset and possessive and difficult and angry, oh, well, now we're starting to see some reasons why there might be, you know, serious problems in the relationship. But maybe not, probably not. It sounds like this is a case of, for whatever reasons, this man no longer qualifies for this woman. And when a relationship is wrong for one person, it's wrong for both. Okay, there's no such thing as a relationship that's right for one person and wrong for the other person. No such animal. Okay, so if it's wrong for one, it's wrong for both. He does not deserve to spend the rest of his life being rejected in a marriage that he would work so hard and be such an outstanding partner for somebody. He deserves the opportunity to go out there and try to find someone who would be eager and absolutely delighted to have this kind of attention and this kind of feedback. So we're not doing anybody any favors by staying, other than some children that may have a little rattling in their minds about, oh my God, you know, our parents are not sexually faithful and happy with each other and everything's not hunky-dory. That's not good for me. I don't like that feeling. I want everybody to be stable. I want all those resources to be lined up right behind me in my interests. Guess what, folks? Forget the kids. None of their business. It's none of anybody's business. So the only person's business is yours. So you have no obligation to anybody about this. Not your husband, not your kids, not your church, not your mother, nobody. Okay? You've only got 100,000 hours left. Don't waste them. So I would run the smallest reasonable experiment first. If you feel an enormous sense of relief and a luxurious feeling of wealth on Friday evening as you have the time to yourself and then you look at a weekend where you don't have anything or anybody to answer to, okay? And then that comes to a close and you go back and it turns out it's a little strained, so it is. We do it again the next weekend. Okay, and then we do it the next weekend after that. And the next week after that, we may take a whole week. We let the evidence of the experiments tell us how to play this thing. And for a very modest amount of money, we can get an awful lot of data. And we let the data essentially tell us whether or not, you know what, I'd be happier not living under this roof. And if that's true, then the next experiment is, you know what, I'm gonna do a intermediate term rental in some corporate apartment for 60 days, and I'm gonna do that. I'm not gonna rent any, you know, I don't have to rent furniture. I don't have to go into huge expenses. It's gonna cost a little bit more. So some, you know, more intermediate term, and you take a longer hiatus. That's how you do things. And if it turns out, wow, that's so good. And then you go back, and after 2 days back, you're like, man, I can't wait to be on my own again. No problem. Then next time you move into your own apartment and you go for longer, you sign yourself a 6-month lease. So you do this in successive approximations, and you let the evidence from your own nervous system tell you whether you're on the right track. But the principle of the solution is that we run the smallest possible experiments first. We rule out any kind of medical, health, biological issues. We make sure that we hear that this is a stable phenomenon. So it turns out that there's not some brooding, you know, resentment issues that have recently come in and interrupted this. And one of the things we do not buy is we do not buy the status quo of current thinking and psychology and marital dynamics and anything else under the sun. Okay, if we talk to these people, nobody'd ever get a divorce. That we have therapists would go home at night and have themselves a scotch and say, oh, thank God, I still have a perfect record. Okay? Perfect record of misery is what they have. What we want to do instead is we want to free people from relationships that these days have a tremendous amount of they have like vice grips on these things. They have financial, they have familial, they have social consequences. There's religious consequences, all kinds of social pressure. are keeping relationships together that should not be together. And so this has the earmarks of relationship that shouldn't be together. However, with the caveats that I've mentioned, of which there are several, I would never rush to judgment on this. And I would and I would take this person through a set of questions and then through a set of conservative procedures to discover how to put her in a position to enjoy her life more.
Fabulous. Now, Dr. Lyle, for some of the listeners who are listening, and they may be in this exact situation where they already know where they are in this relationship, what are some things that they can say to people who give them pushback when they start saying, well, I'm going to go away for the weekend? And now the husband or the mother-in-law or the kids say, well, where are you going for a weekend? Why are you doing this?
Just like, I don't have the answers. I don't have the answers. I just need to go. That's it. Done. We don't have to give answers to people. Okay, so that's it. We just, you know, go into a cocoon. We don't need to talk to these people. No, you need to talk to me. Nope. No, you don't. No, you don't. They have to earn the right to be talked to. So they better ask those questions in a way that's super easy for you. They better be there for you. We're not there to reduce their anxiety to keep up some status quo, some family structure. Everybody can just pound sand down a rat hole. It's disgusting. Okay? It is disgusting that people put pressure on other individuals. This is hard enough as it is to try to find your own happiness without having to calculate all the social stress. Now, your job is to figure out what it is that you think you may want to do. She's got an internal voice, essentially an imagery inside of her head that's whispering, telling her, take a right turn. Keeps telling her. Okay? The only reason she's not is all these considerations from other nervous systems and the fallout and all the pressure and everything else under the sun. But she's got it thought through pretty well. She can afford to take a right turn. She can afford to take an experiment. And all the pushback that would come from, you know, the pastor, the therapist, the mother-in-law, her mother, the kid, her pushy daughter, whoever it is. Hey, you know what? I don't have any answers for you. You know, you're just going to have to wait. I'll tell you later in my own good time. That's how we deal with
it. Love it. Love it.
Yeah.
Dr. Lyle, more people have to listen to you speak about these things, but I love it.
All right. What do we got?
All right. Our next question is about a, you know, cultural shift. Now, talked about this before where you say, well, things that were the way they were and how they are different now. So this question is on the same topic. So, Dr. Lyle, you often say that many things today aren't that much different from the past. However, I've heard many veteran teachers complain that when they first got into teaching decades ago, parents backed the teachers. But now these teachers say that the parents question the teachers even more. Their complaint is that their students' behavior is worse because of the greater willingness in society to question authority. For instance, they tell me that years ago, if a child got in trouble at school, there was almost, without exception, more trouble for that child waiting for them at home. Today, if a parent is called about a child acting out, the parent is more likely to blame the teacher. I've heard this complaint from teachers working at schools at both low and high socioeconomic levels, so it doesn't seem to be limited to teachers working in challenging school districts, though I recognize that what I'm hearing is anecdotal at best. I also wonder if school administrators are feeling more compelled to tolerate misbehavior, given that in some states, there are laws today prohibiting them from issuing suspensions and expulsions. And given that money for schools is often tied directly to student attendance. Dr. Lyle, do you think that there's been a cultural shift? Are people in general in the U.S. more likely to question authority today? Or are other things likely at play?
I would certainly say that that some of this type of thing is happening, and that's I'm not sure what you would call it a cultural shift. I would just say it's an ongoing cultural evolution. As things change a little bit, they sort of chip away in the they sort of evolve in ways that are sometimes unpredictable. But I think usually when I talk about the things that are pretty similar to the past, I'm usually talking about that the human nature and its problems are pretty similar to the way they were in the Stone Age. Okay. But if we start talking about, and also I would certainly say that things are quite a bit similar to how they've been my whole life. Things have been quite similar across that, you know, 60 years. Now, are there changes? Certainly. Overall, life is much better than it has been in the past. So are there a few perturbations that come along, and are there trade-offs that we have to endure? When one thing gets better, sometimes there's something, other feature about it that gets worse. So we now have to put up with some more entitled little brats. But in this way, we don't have defenseless children being beaten by schoolmasters in a way that they might have in the past. So more recently, obviously they probably weren't being beaten by schoolmasters in 1990. And there probably is, though, a continued cultural evolution towards essentially litigiousness against people in authority and any abusiveness, et cetera. So this is a CB that, you know, there can be a pendulum that swings a little bit too far, and it probably has in some instances, without a doubt, probably has, but no great harm done generally when this happens. I'm always rolling my eyes at when anybody is talking about the good old days in almost any dimension. Let's just review here for a second, folks. Let's go, what are we, 1919? So I think, when did women get the vote? Like 1922? I can't remember when it was. So we go back 100 years and women can't vote. Lynchings are probably still going on. And black men that did have a vote, you know, probably had a very difficult time getting a ballot in their hands. Being gay was an unmistakable horror. Women were all but unable to work as professionals. People were dirt poor, ignorant as hell. Life was difficult with few options. There's no birth control, no tampons, no Kotex, you know, et cetera. What are we talking about? So of course, life is massively better than it was 100 years ago. So now we're going to say, okay, well, I wasn't talking about 100 years ago. Okay, well, let's look then. Let's go to 50 years ago. That's what? 1969. So we, you know, put people on the moon. That's cool. But in the Vietnam War, you have a draft that you don't have now. Still a scandal to be gay. Civil rights is just getting some traction. Martin Luther King gets shot. Women are still barely professionals. I mean, where exactly is this nirvana? So it wasn't 100 years ago, and it wasn't 50 years ago. You know, was it 25 years ago? I don't think so. Okay, so what we're going to find is that, you know, essentially life is getting better and better and better and better, a chip at a time. Better economy than ever before, better environment than ever before. We are freer, wealthier, et cetera, everything, and much more accepting of individual differences across all kinds of spectrums, whether they're religious, racial, cultural, you know, other belief systems, et cetera. So I don't look at anything like this as any kind of, you know, major problem. I look at the mega trend of human life under free societies, and it all looks fabulous. That doesn't mean that there aren't some pendulums that may temporarily swing too far in one direction. And I think maybe this is one of those cases. But I'm sure it's not so far. It's not like the inmates are running the asylum and children don't have any respect for teachers' authority in a classroom. It's just that some shitheads are probably getting away with things as a small minority, and they're getting with their shithead genes inside the shithead child, also in the shithead parents that are going to the administration and defending their little monsters. And intimidating, you know, so is some of that going on with more latitude than before? Undoubtedly. But I can't imagine that it's some, quote, cultural shift of any magnitude. I think it's an annoying thing that teachers have to put up with now. But along with that came from greater scrutiny and greater vulnerability on the part of school officials that may have in some ways been intimidating children in the past when they shouldn't have. So there's trade-offs. And but I'm not looking for evidence of cultural unwinding and the pillars of civilization crumbling because we got some of this crap going on in schools. I don't think so. I think that you would consider this a minor perturbation of possibly an overcorrection of the pendulum swinging a little bit too far, that things will swing back, find themselves in reasonable within reasonable oscillations on either side of an appropriate equilibrium, and life will continue to get better in domain after domain after domain as human beings get smarter and smarter about how to solve the problems that human beings face.
Now, Dr. Ladd, do you think it has anything to do with that if you're too agreeable as a parent and your child misbehaves like any normal child can sometimes do, that the administrators mm-hmm. will now, you know, walk you down the path where they now have to take psychiatric medications when in fact they are not indicated?
No, I wouldn't know about that. I do know that I've certainly heard that, God forbid you have a kid that's a little energetic and a little impulsive, that there can be a lot of pressure to put kids on ADHD medications. So I think that's a part of something that's circulating around in this mix. But I don't know too much about these details, and I don't want to speak in broad generalities about, you know, some cultural phenomenon when I don't have any data.
Hmm. Fascinating.
Okay.
All right. Fantastic. Okay. So our next question is about what to do when faced in the face of temptation, which I'm curious about. So Dr. Lyle, in the whole food plant-based world, you've said that we should work harder on our environments than we do on ourselves. But regardless of how hard we might work to clean up our environments, particularly our home environment, it seems that inevitably we might find ourselves in a situation where we are confronted with something, like maybe peanut butter and chocolate, to be precise, that is tempting us. Is there anything at all that we can do in that moment of temptation? Or at that point, is it too late?
Well, it turns out there's a trick that if you actually pinch your nose and then you turn around three times and say, take me home, and click your heels together. you can not eat it. That's what you can.
I remember watching Beetlejuice,
yeah.
and maybe like we
yeah.
should come up with something where people say, Doug Lyle, Doug Lyle, Doug Lyle, and then you appear like on the side of their shoulder. Or Chef AJ or Dr. Goldhammer.
Chef AJ is much better.
Yeah.
Much prettier. Much prettier than me. Oh my goodness. Sorry folks. I mean, you're going to unless you're one of the hyper conscientious freaks of the world, like Alan or AJ, you're probably going to stumble. And when you stumble, let's not catastrophize over it. Your good health can handle stumbles. Let's just make sure that it's not an avalanche, for goodness sakes. So that's why we do a good job controlling our environment. So we have good, healthy food in our environment, and we don't have a bunch of junk food in our environment, because the reason it's in your environment is so that you can absorb it like an amoeba. See you next week.
All right. Sorry, everybody. We had a little bit of technical difficulties. Dr. Lyle, are you back on?
Nathan, are you there?
Yep. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I told people I might be leaving in case, but now we're back. So we can now close out more appropriately et cetera.
Sorry about that, everybody.
Go ahead.
We've had a little technical difficulty.
No worries.
Okay. Okay, so where were we? We were talking about these the magical things that you can do to avoid the temptations.
Yes.
And it turns out there isn't anything like that.
All right. What else do we have? Anything else?
So far, we will resume the rest of the questions tomorrow next week. Dr. Lyle, thank you again for coming on. We will talk to everybody next week, and please send in your questions. And we added a new feature to the website, beatyourgenes.org, that if you have a situation that you might potentially want an on-air session, just submit your question, then we filter through them and see what we can do. So that's www.beatyourgenes.org. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Dr. Lyle, as always, we love it. Thank you for coming on.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe, write us a review, or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G. and Dr. Lyle with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.